Welcome to the Nerd Party.
Oh, Miles here.
Your outpost for the week is back and freshly delivered, and I am just one of your hosts here, Matthew Rushing, and with me, as she is always, the recently apparated into the building, Drea Kaufman.
Hello!
Oh, goodness.
Hi. Yes. I love Phoenix traffic.
Oh, yay. Good times. I mean,
it's real bad.
Yeah, it's, I mean, honestly, it's bad everywhere, so.
Yeah, it's not LA bad, but it's still its own cup of bad.
I'm so glad that I don't have to drive like downtown Portland area and try and get home, especially since, you know, I live across the river and there are only two bridges from my side to that side. So yes, it's not good. But
and we're here today to tell you all about local geography of Portland and Phoenix.
So just in case that isn't enough to entice you, we are going to talk about the chapter Owls, chapter 31 from Harry Potter and the Order of the Phoenix. And before we do that, of course, don't forget you can find us wherever you get your podcasts. We're on Apple Podcasts and iTunes, which is a great place to give us a star rating review, let people know what you think of the show. Because it does help people find the show when they're looking for podcasts. And you can also find us wherever you get your podcasts. So anywhere podcasts can be had, you can find us. You want to just make sure that you subscribe wherever you are getting your podcasts. So that way you get the fresh new episode each and every week once it gets dropped out to the world. And then you can find us on Twitter at Join Nerd Party. That's the entire network there. So you can see everything that's coming out. You can talk to anybody who's on the network over there on Twitter. We're on Facebook at facebook.com/thenerdparty. We've got our website at thenerdparty.com. And again, great place to check out all the different shows that are coming out. And maybe you'd like to leave us an email. So don't hesitate to do that. You can go over to thenerdparty.com/contact, choose a show, choose Owlpost, and then that comes to Drea and I. So this chapter, Drea, we kind of pick up right after the next one in the sense that Ron is still very much in the afterglow of having helped Gryffindor win. And I just love this because it was really funny to watch Harry and Hermione try to find a way to break it to Ron that they didn't actually see the game, except for the first part where when Ron was not doing good, and then the news about what Hagrid has for them to do. This was kind of an enjoyable part of this chapter.
Actually, this chapter, most of this chapter gave me a great deal of anxiety because I have a little bit of test-taking anxiety. Not Hermione-level test-taking anxiety, but experiencing her test-taking anxiety was a bit much for me.
Yeah, I mean, it's a lot. I mean, this whole chapter is really about that, all of these students struggling with, you know, taking their owls. And so, yes, I can totally understand.
And starting out by having to tell one of your best friends that you didn't see one of his most proudest accomplishments doesn't really set you up to be less anxious as the chapter goes on. So to that point, I just kind of spent the whole chapter being like really anxious. And then, it also doesn't end super great. So this chapter was really emotional. Like, it was very emotionally taxing for me.
Yeah. I mean, I can totally understand because I think, you know, there are a lot of people are right there with you that don't enjoy this process. Like, they don't enjoy taking tests and they don't enjoy that part of school. Talk about it, anxiety. And like, this is the biggest part of their lives, you know, these young lives. This is going to help determine what they will be able to do going forward. And so, yeah, like you said, it doesn't help that you have to start off by telling Ron, yeah, bud, we didn't actually see what you did. We heard it was great because you keep telling us about it, which is awesome. But what Hagrid wanted to show us is the fact that, you know, he brought his giant brother back, which, you know, I love Ron's response. He is just like, he did what? He brought what? I mean, he has the same exact response that Hermione did, basically. And it's really funny because Ron and Hermione have a very similar thought process on this. I mean, Harry's much more like, he doesn't love it. You know, he's not excited about it, but they kind of both freak out about it. And I thought that was really funny to watch them kind of freak out about it together. Because his first thing to say is like, he brought what and hid it in the forest? Like, he's yelling and it's just great. And Hermione's like, yes. And she's all irritable about it still. So, it, you know, it's like you said, it's just combining the stress factor.
Yeah, and very subtly and kind of sweetly, you know, Hermione always kind of has a logical thought through explanation on everything, doesn't usually have a strong sort of emotional decision-making calculus. And here we see that that is now factoring into her decision-making, and it really speaks to kind of her integrity. And that, you know, Ron keeps saying like, oh, we don't have to do that. Like, we'd be crazy to do that. We can't do that, blah, blah, blah. And she's like, we promised. And he's like, pushes it. And she's like, and I think the wording is even described as she weakly says, we promised. Like, she is sticking to that, even though this is a horrible idea. You know, to her, her word is her word. And that's just such a slightly, I mean, it's a, not a different character trait than we've gotten from her, but it's not a character trait that has been like highly advertised for Hermione, right? Like,
yeah.
It's a little bit of, I feel like, just growth in seeing her the effect that all of the people in her life are having on her and how important this is. And it's a new opportunity for her to kind of show that. That was kind of always a Ron thing or a Harry thing before. And so now we're seeing that sort of permeate into her personality as well, which is was really sweet and kind of small. And it was nice that Ron kind of dropped it from there and was like, oh, okay, like, fine, I get it. Okay, we'll not worry about it until we have to worry about it.
Yeah, I really like the way you're putting that, because I think it's, you know, one of the big character traits, obviously, for Gryffindors is loyalty. I mean, that's one of their main character traits that, you know, is a part of who is picked for that house. And I think we really see that Hermione has the same amount of loyalty as the other main Gryffindors that we spend so much time with, you know, and yes, Harry has always been somebody who's very loyal, but like you said, this is the moment where Hermione kind of shines in that, and showing the fact that she deserves the title of Gryffindor, you know, like she's earning that title here. And I think that's really neat, because like you said, it's not necessarily a side of Hermione that we've seen before.
Right. And this is that, like, when everyone's like, oh, why, you know, Hermione belonged in Ravenclaw because she's so smart and all this stuff. Like, this is one of those moments that falls into that category of her Gryffindor like qualities that the Sorting Hat could see, is that loyalty along with the bravery that all three of them exhibit. And there's kind of no doubt that they have. So, yeah, I really loved that small little part of her just sticking to it and being true. So it was nice. And I like that Rowling didn't have Ron continue being bitter about them missing his match, because kind of like in the Goblet of Fire, he held on to sort of his bitterness throughout most of that book. So this is also some character growth for Ron to appreciate the severity of what's going on and be able to look past himself a little bit, which is always kind of Ron's journey, is needing to look outside himself and beyond himself and see the bigger picture. So this is also kind of a baby step in that direction for him too, because that we'll continue to see, no spoilers here, but we'll continue to see that that's still a growth opportunity for him throughout the rest of the series.
Yeah, no, I absolutely agree. And I think, you know, the thing that helps here is that it's not as though Harry and Hermione truly had a choice in this, you know, like they're going to help their friend. And as, you know, I love the way that Harry puts it. He's like, you know how Hagrid is, you know, so it, you know, and Ron is very much right there with them and understanding exactly who their friend Hagrid is. And of course, he even mentions the fact that, you know, we've had, you know, acromantulas and we've had dragons and now we've got giants. Like, oh, Hagrid's really done one over for himself now. So, you know, you're absolutely
Hagrid
right.
Hagrid's such
the
lovable little Hufflepuff. He's a big Hufflepuff teddy bear.
Yeah. I think it's really interesting because, you know, you were mentioning that all the stress with the kids and taking their owls, and we see the different ways that everybody's dealing with this throughout the chapter. And one of the ways we see...
Or not dealing with this throughout the chapter.
one of the ways that Malfoy is not dealing with it is by talking of how you know, very loudly about, you know, how his father knows certain people, and it's not about how much you know, it's who you know, and how they know Griselda Marchbanks, and, you know, she's the one who administers the test, and how they have her for dinner and everything. And this moment to shine comes from Neville, where he's like, oh, I don't think that's going to make a difference. One, because my gran knows her, and, well, she's never mentioned being with the Malfoys at all. And
well, and then he kind of follows up with character traits that she yes. has that are similar to his grandmother, who we've met in a previous chapter and we know a little bit about, and it just doesn't fit her character to associate herself with the Malfoys outside of maybe a formal pleasantry. So, you know, we got that little bit of information about this tester as well, which kind of gives us an idea of what to expect with this character.
And this is the first moment, too, for Neville, having made any mention of the fact that they met each other at St. Mungo's, and kind of calling back to that, because he mentions the fact that you remember meeting my gran and you know what she says about me. And so...
Right, because they were trying to be encouraging and supportive of Neville, and they're like, but that's a good thing mm-hmm. for you then. And he was like, no, not really.
Yeah, so it's interesting to watch them deal with this. And the other thing that I love is watching the boys try and buy like memory enhancers, and Hermione is being a very good prefect and like just breaking up all these deals happening. And she's like, guys, you don't really want this stuff. It doesn't really work. In fact, I've actually taken a look at it, and it's actually just dried doxy droppings. And the boys are much less interested in wanting this once they realize that's the case.
This is just a true Hermione moment. And I love everything about this because it's so incredibly relatable for me. How much all of these kids have to hate Hermione right now. Like mm-hmm. straight up hate. Like this is irrational level hate. Because she's taking away these placebos because she's got her head about her and it's her job. Like, I am just flashing back to high school and how much they must just hate her guts right now for not letting them have this, right? And especially knowing about Hermione and that she's very smart and intelligent and wouldn't need things like this and stuff. Like, I loved everything about this. It was just like the most pure Hermione response to what's going on that you just like lean into it and you're like, this is so terrible, but I love it, you know? So I do love it. Not only does she kind of talk him out of it, but like she is just a stone cold, no cares given prefect pouring this stuff out the window. Like it was just amazing. Amazing.
Yeah, it is. It is really funny to watch Hermione, you know, not give a fork about what people think. It's totally true, and it's just awesome. It's really interesting too, because we get Professor Marchbanks arriving, and she is very old, and she is actually having kind of trouble hearing Umbridge, which I think is funny because you just know that's annoying the crud out of Umbridge. And she's just saying how, you know, she hasn't heard from Dumbledore recently, and I have no idea where, you have no idea where he is possibly. And she's like, oh, no, not at all. And I really love Umbridge saying, oh, well, he'll probably be caught soon anyway. And she gives this wonderful, hilarious explanation of why Dumbledore will not. And that's because, you know, I personally, you know, tested him for his transfiguration of charms and when he did it for the newts, and he did things with a wand I'd never seen before, and it just it's fantastic.
She is no forks given, telling them like it is. Like, he's an amazing wizard, and I know because I have firsthand experience, and I like, she has something to compare it to, and it's just great to see her like squirm a little in terms of what's going on, and And I love that you have to know that this tester knows it's pissing off Umbridge. Like, this tester is not oblivious to what's going on. She knows what she said. But I both love that. And I love that that seeing this play out for Harry and Ron, and I think Hermione was there too, both makes Harry uncomfortable and more comfortable at the same time. Like, it kind of reassures him that Dumbledore's going to be okay, but then also is really like, adds to the anxiety of all this testing that's going on. It's real. They're here. Oh my gosh. It's intimidating, right? And so watching that kind of play out and being part of that experience just makes you feel like you're there and you're going through it too. And not that we want to go through it, but in this case, it's a very impactful scene.
Couple of things. The biggest part of this becomes about them studying and then taking their owls. And one of my favorite things was watching Harry pass, and he's like, I'm pretty positive I just scored an owl in my Defense Against the Dark Arts, and him passing Umbridge. And he doesn't even care about her stupid little smirk when he does, because he knows that he just got that outstanding level. And not only that, but I love the person that is giving him the test, and they ask him, they're like, hey, I hear you can do a Patronus. Like, I'll give you extra points if you can do one. And Harry's motivation is looking at Umbridge and imagining her getting sacked. And he, you know, is able to produce his Patronus perfectly. And it's such a great little moment. It's just like, there aren't a lot of wins at this point in the book, but this is one tiny little win that just, it does, like Harry, make you kind of grin ear to ear.
Well, and it's super cute because she essentially is just kind of fangirling out about this. And I think it also, to the reader, not only gives us like that little spark of hope and like, oh, there's a little joyful moment, but it also, I think, has a slightly bigger message here that we've heard so much about the ministry and controlling the message and controlling the media and all of that and kind of swaying the larger wizarding population against Dumbledore and Harry and all of this thought process. And this is kind of an interesting note where she kind of believes it and is buying into it and is sort of secretly fangirling out for him, right? And I think that's just kind of a crack in the it speaks to the like lack and the loss of power the ministry is having, right? Like, they're slowly losing that grip on the larger population, so they're grabbing on to everything they can tighter. So the extra control we're feeling at Hogwarts, we're now kind of seeing why, because we're seeing that more and more of the wizarding world is believing Harry and believing in Harry. And I think that this is just kind of a little crack and a little glimpse at that, because if they didn't believe him, they wouldn't believe he could do it. And two, they wouldn't ask him to do it. So I think it's just a tiny little moment that gives you just a little bit of hope in general, not just joy for Harry, but and him getting to do something he's very proud of and accomplished. But it gives you kind of an idea in the long run that maybe all hope is not lost yet.
No, absolutely. And it's a great moment there, because as they keep going, one of their last big tests is astronomy. And of course it's held at night. And while they're trying to take their astronomy test is the moment that Umbridge decides that she's going to sack Hagrid, and it turns out to an all-out wizarding brawl on the lawn as they're trying to take their test. So it's not going very well for anyone trying to take this test, because they can't pay attention because of what's happening at Hagrid's. And even McGonagall runs all the way out there to try and get in between things, and she gets attacked and knocked out by four different stunning spells at one time. Without even, and I mean, it turns into a huge mess. So yeah, I'm pretty sure all of these students pretty much failed their, or got really low grades on their owl test for astronomy. But this is the moment where not only is Hagrid now gone, Dumbledore's now gone, but also McGonagall's knocked out too. So it's like things go from kind of bad to worse here very quickly.
For sure. And it's interesting because they also talk about a few things such as like, why is she doing it now? And it's because she's trying to avoid another situation like Trelawney, where everyone gets to see, right? So she tried to kind of do it in the cover of night and sneaking up on him and trying to take him off guard. There's a part of you that knows she knew the owls were happening and that likely that she could watch, you know, the little smile she gave Harry earlier was knowing that she was going to make him watch her sack Hagrid, you know. And then on top of that, actually, the interesting thing we found out is, you know, the rest of the kids kind of get clued in to some of what's happening, right? So Ron and Harry and Hermione know that Hagrid's going to get sacked at some point. But the rest of the students that love Hagrid don't really know that. And this is a surprise to them. And I love that we actually find out who's been sniffing or sneaking the Nifflers into Umbridge's office, because Lee Jordan actually goes, oh, actually, that's been me. And now I feel really bad about it. And I think it's so funny that we get told who's been sneaking Nifflers into her office, and this is, you know, they're kind of cluing into what's happening. And I just think that's really interesting.
Yeah, I really liked this part, you know, where we learned that it's Lee Jordan who's been doing it, and he's just been levitating them up through her window, which is just fantastic. And it shows, you know, that there are other students here that, you know, don't like what's happening at all. We have an interesting conversation about, you know, why Hagrid could get away, and that it's because he's got the giant blood, and it's very hard to stun a giant, that makes them very tough. And then, you know, we've got the kids who are just kind of reeling from everything that's happened. So they took this test at midnight. By the time they kind of, like, it all starts to settle down in the common room, it's about 4 a.m. and Harry just kind of falls asleep. And then they have their history of magic test, and Harry's having a really hard time, like, with some answers, and he's trying to think of the answer, and then in the middle of the test, he starts to see something going on with Voldemort, and Voldemort is in the Department of Mysteries, and he's got Sirius with him, and the next thing Harry knows... he awakes on the ground with his scar still on fire and the entire great hall where everybody's been taking their tests around him.
And that's the cliffhanger that we hang off on or leave off on.
Yeah, I mean,
dun, dun, dun.
Bum, bum, bum. It really is. I mean, because absolutely you are right on the edge of your seat at this point, and there is no stopping from this point too. I mean, the rest of the book is just a snowball. Everything that's happened is now going to be undone, basically. And so,
yeah.
But we don't have any more to talk about in the episode. So, because we can't talk about the next chapter just yet, you'll have to come back next week. Or if you're binging this, just go right to the next episode. But Drea, if anybody does want to catch up with you, where can they find you?
Sure. You can find me on Instagram at Drea Kaufman or on Twitter at PCFChick.
And you can find me on Twitter, Instagram, and Letterboxd, and even Vero under the name MattRushing02. I am also here on the network doing Aggressive Negotiations with John Mills as we talk about Star Wars each and every week. You can find me on the Trek FM network. I do two shows over there. One is called The Orb with Chris Jones. We talk about Star Trek Deep Space Nine. You can find me doing the 602 Club, which is a general geek show, and we talk about all the fandoms we love. In fact, we just recently did Spider-Man Far From Home, so we're covering everything we can over there. You can also find me, last but not least, on a show with my friend Courtney, and that's where we talk about films through the lens of faith, and that is called Cinema Stories. But thank you so much for checking your outpost.
Mischief managed.
Join the revolution. Join the Nerd Party.